Nikki, is still gone. Anyway, let's see what Nikki has to say. My dearest Nora, I know that I've been stuck here in Hollywood for well over 2 months now, writing and rewriting this new Dashiell Hammett script for Bill and Myrna.
Sweetheart, you know how much I miss you and love you. I just want you to know that I'm sorry I can't be there to help solve your new case. There is no one else better to handle all the twists and turns this new case has already sent your way.
All my love to you, and of course, to dear little Asta, your loving husband Nikki. Oh, Asta, you are such a scene stealer. The best little wire-haired terrier in the whole world. Music. It's time for some music on the radio. I hope I can tune in WGN from Chicago.
And welcome to the WGTD Radio Theater in this, our 12th season. And today is show number 101. And award-winning once again is the WGTD Radio Theater, as we just won two prestigious awards on May 7th from the Wisconsin Broadcasters Association. A first place award for our entire 11th season in the category of Best Specialty Programming. Also, a third-place award for last season's production of A Seat by the Window, written and directed by our very own Barbara Tyla. Our radio theater has now won 10 major awards over the last 11 years. For the 2015 broadcast year, there were over 1,600 programs nominated for the WBA Excellence in Broadcasting Awards, and once again, WGTD and our radio theater have been recognized by our broadcasting peers. Today we present The New Adventures of Nora Charles, The Murdered Murderer Never Calls Back, starring Janelle Powers as Nora Charles. This morning we will also present something very special at the conclusion of The New Adventures of Nora Charles. As always, support for the WGTD Radio Theater comes from the Kenosha Law Firm of Aaliyah, Dumay, Dunn, and McTernan, a full-service law firm with an emphasis on personal injury, civil litigation, and business law. On the web at addmlaw.com. Support also comes from the Brown Alstrup Performing Arts Foundation, which is a nonprofit foundation located in Salem, Wisconsin. The foundation's goals are to foster the growth of community arts groups and to promote excellence in the performing arts in Wisconsin and the Midwest. On the web at brownalstrupfoundation.org. And now, we return to The New Adventures of Nora Charles, The Murdered Murderer Never Calls Back, starring Janelle Powers as Nora Charles, written by Steve Brown and Michael Alstrup, Vicki Dumay as our executive director. Other cast members are from the 91.1 Players.
Finally, I can get back to my story. And in case you forgot, I'm Nora Charles.
Mrs. Charles, what time would you like your lunch?
I thought I heard you out there in the kitchen, Miriam. Let me see. It's almost 11:30, but how about 12:30?
That's fine, Mrs. Charles.
What's on the menu for today?
Your favorite Saturday lunch, Mrs. Charles. Sharp Wisconsin cheddar cheese sandwich, grilled, of course, on thick seedless rye and a bowl of creamy tomato soup.
Sounds delicious, as always. I better get down to business on this latest case of mine. But first... Ah, string of pearls. One of my favorites. Now, where's the latest Kenosha County Sheriff's report on that Kevin Casey murder? Ah, here it is.
Mrs. Charles, it's Kenosha County Sheriff Tom Jester on the phone, and he says it's urgent.
Thank you, Miriam. I'll take it in the living room. Sheriff Jester, how's my favorite crime fighter on this beautiful, but brisk, December morning?
Laura Charles, the best darn lady detective this side of Milwaukee. I'm doing quite well, thank you.
I hear that your office might have some news breaking soon on the Frankie Cosentino murder back in July at the Four Aces Bar over near Columbus Park.
Well, Nora, the murder is correct, but the place isn't. It actually took place out in Twin Lakes in the western part of Kenosha County at the Green Pastures Writing Academy.
Really?
Yep, two bullets to the head.
What about his two buddy boys?
Oh, you mean Frank Infasino and Willie Cavelli?
Yes, all three of them were always up to no good, you know.
Oh, I sure do. In fact, Cavelli died of lead poisoning, as in a gangland shooting about a month ago. He was found over near 24th Avenue.
That's not too far from where Cosentino lived.
Right, he lived at 5525 23rd Avenue.
Right in the heart of town, where many of the elite live, like the Ruffalos, Petrellis, and the Savaglios.
Nora Charles, are you pulling a Nick Charles on me and trying to present me with a neat little package, bow and all?
Sheriff Tom, I'm not sure. At least, not yet. But I bet you that the county district attorney, John McAvoy, is probably a step or two ahead of me.
Nora, I'm not sure if anyone could be ever ahead of you on investigating a case.
Tom Chester, you must be up for re-election again very soon.
Oh, not until next year. But I'll take your vote anytime, Nora. And I don't mean vote early and vote often. That only happens, so I've heard, down in Chicago, or maybe in Silver Lake.
Well, Sheriff, there's someone at my front door. I'm sure we'll be chatting again very soon.
Oh, I'm sure of that, Nora. Say hello to Nick for me when you speak to him again. Bye now.
I will. Chat soon. Bye-bye.
Mrs. Charles, Dina Infasino is here to see you.
Okay. Thank you, Miriam. Please show her in. I wonder why Frankie Infasino's wife is here to see me. Mrs. Infasino, it's nice to see you again.
Mrs. Charles, I do appreciate you taking the time to talk with me.
Of course, Mrs. Infasino.
Oh, please. Call me Dina.
Thank you, Dina. Would you like a glass of iced tea?
That would be lovely. Thank you.
Miriam, Mrs. Infasino and I would appreciate it if you could have some iced tea, please.
Yes, Mrs. Charles.
So, Dina, what can I do for you today?
It's my Frankie. I'm worried about him.
Why is that, Dina?
Federal agents are after my Frankie. They follow him day and night. They sit outside of our house in their two black sedans morning till night.
Dina, what about Cosentino and Cavelli? They're both dead. Shot dead. The newspaper said your Frank was somehow involved. Is that true?
My Frankie never listened to them two. He would take hikes around Montgomery Lake and even Camp Lake. He heard the wind blowing through the trees and he watched the ships out on Lake Michigan. He's a good man, not a monster, not like Capone.
Dina, I'm not sure what I can do about any of this. Your Frank always seems to be getting into trouble. Deep trouble. Illegal stills over at Kenosha County, murders, federal agents. Most of them undercover are streaming over the border from Illinois each and every day.
Nora, that's not true. My Frankie's a deeply religious man. He goes to Mass every day, and he takes communion every time he goes to Mass. Sometimes twice a day at St. Michael's. He is not a murderer. Not my Frankie. Not my Frankie! And I know exactly what happened.
Dina, first of all, you need to calm down. Maybe that iced tea was not strong enough for you.
I'm sorry, Nora, but this story is all wrong. All wrong! Someone is going to pay for this.
Dina, let's start over. I have this report from Sheriff Jester that I want to read to you.
Jester? He's a rat. And I've heard he's on the take with that Herman Yankee operation.
this report says...
I don't give a darn what that report says. It's all hogwash. All of it.
Dina, there is no need to get so riled up. Now, what can I do for you?
Oh, let me tell you something, Nora. Maybe I better call you Mrs. Charles at this point. You're from the ritzy part of town and don't know what it's like to go a day without something to eat. Well, I do.
Dina, I still don't know why you came over here in the first place. But I'm beginning to get a strong feeling that you're in trouble, and you need my help. Excuse me, Dina. I better get this phone call. Miriam is upstairs at the moment.
Okay.
Hello? Hello?
Who was that?
No one. There was no one there. Probably another wrong number.
You don't know the half of it, Mrs. Charles.
What do you mean?
Oh, this is no fluke. The Chicago mob is all over the place.
The mob?
Capone, Dillinger, Bugs Moran, you name them. They were all up here.
Everyone has heard that before. But how do you or your husband Frank fit into all of this?
I'll tell you. Volts Lake, lots of money, and murder.
Okay, so this is where Nikki, if he were here at this very moment, would talk to our radio audience. With his wonderful way of giving them his own point of view, in his Nikki Thin Man style. But he isn't here. He's still in Hollywood. And tomorrow is December 7th, just 17 days left before Christmas. Okay, so now here's my narration. For those of you who are still hanging on my every word, I say, here's some of the background we need to fill in the gaps. Nearly every name gangster of the time slept and spent time here in Kenosha and Walworth counties, whether they were at the Lake Como Inn or somewhere around Volts Lake. In closing this brief narration, let me read something for you that I jotted down last night at about midnight. So many people sneaking around the law, gangsters moving up in the ranks and began more vicious crimes, including murder and robbery. They felt that these crimes were necessary to protect their operations and keep them alive. Murder was widespread because some people who were being paid to keep quiet would talk. In return, they were dealt with very harshly. Could that be Dino Infusino's husband, Frank? And Burlington, Wisconsin residents, and that's just up the road in western Racine County, claimed that Burlington was used as one of the dumping grounds for some of those poor souls who crossed Capone and his gang. Some of them were disposed of in surrounding lakes and others in underground tunnels in Burlington.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes, Miriam?
That phone call.
Well, who was on the phone, Miriam?
Well, at first there was some heavy breathing, and then the man said something about a bungalow in Camp Lake, and the basement, and...
And what else?
And then I heard what sounded like two gunshots, and then the telephone hit the ground really hard.
Now, this may sound a little crazy question, but did you hear anything else after the phone hit the floor?
Yes. I heard the phone almost like it was being hung up, and I thought I heard someone breathing at the other end of the line.
What do you think it could mean, Mrs. Charles? It don't sound good to me.
I'm not sure, but I will tell you this. I agree with you. It don't. I rather, it doesn't sound good at all.
I'll get that, Mrs. Charles.
Thank you, Miriam.
Mrs. Charles, Detective Tony Franco is here to see you.
Please, ask the detective to wait a moment.
Yes, ma'am.
Mrs. Infocino, I will be in touch with you, possibly tomorrow.
Ah, very well, Mrs. Charles. I do hope you'll be able to tell me what's going on.
I'll do my best, Mrs. Infocino. Miriam, please show Mrs. Infocino out.
Yes, ma'am. I'll show her out through the living room.
Excellent. And please ask the detective to come in. Good evening, Detective Franco. What can I do for you?
I received a telephone call from the city manager's office.
You mean Roy Wolf?
Yes.
Roy and his wife, Edna May, were just over here for dinner last week. Anyway, Detective, what did Roy want?
He wanted me to ask you about the death of Joey Tomasello.
I see. And why would the city manager want to know that?
Well, Sheriff Jester told him that you were chatting with Infocino's wife and thought you might have some leads.
Really? Well, that's quite interesting.
Yeah, well, why is that?
Well, Dina Infocino was just here, and she never mentioned Tomasello.
Well, it seems that your husband Nick was doing some digging through some court records out in Los Angeles and came across some information.
My Nicky was working on a case? And when was that?
Apparently, a few days ago.
I'll have to check with Nicky tomorrow, even though it's Sunday, and he's probably still at the studio.
He works on Sunday?
Tomorrow may be Sunday, December the 7th, but they work 7 days a week out in Hollywood.
Well, Mrs. Charles, please let me know if your husband has anything to say about Tomasello.
I will do that, Detective. I wonder why Nicky was at the police station in Los Angeles. Checking on the Tomasello killing? Maybe he... Hello?
Hello, sweetie. I hope it's not too late to call.
No, of course not. I'm still downstairs here in the den, working on the case.
Oh, good. The case? Which one?
The same one you are. In between your Hollywood studio stops and all of those beautiful starlets.
Do I sense some jealousy seeping through the phone lines? Not my sweet little Nora.
No, of course not. I just miss my sweet Nicky.
Thanks, dear. Now, what's going on with your case?
I was just going to ask you the same thing.
I asked you first.
If you insist. A detective from the county sheriff's office stopped by.
Oh, that must be Tony. Tony Franco, right?
Yes. How did you know?
I got a call from the city manager this afternoon, giving me the scoop.
So, are you going to fill me in on what you know that I don't?
Well, sweetie, he told me that some of the Capone gang have been hanging out over at Volts Lake, as well as out in Lake Geneva.
Oh, that means drugs, guns, and...
And that means a lot of no good happening real close to you.
Asta, it's okay.
What's wrong with Asta?
Oh, nothing. He must have heard something outside. Probably a dog barking.
He usually handles another barking dog pretty well. Maybe it's something or someone else.
Maybe. And maybe not. I'm thinking Infocino. He's not happy that his wife Dina spent 2 hours here earlier today.
Nora, what time is it there in Wisconsin?
Time? Oh, just after midnight.
Already?
Yes, Nicky. It's now Sunday, December 7th, and the year, as you know, is 1941.
Nora, the date and year are not important to me or anyone else. I'm not worried. I'm more worried about Willie Cavelli.
Cavelli? He's dead. Why are you worried about him?
The Los Angeles County police records have some interesting information about Cavelli, as well as Infocino and even Capone.
Nikki, are you there? Hello? Hello, Nikki?
Roosevelt has just announced the attack also was made on all naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu.
We take you now to Washington.
The details are not available. They will be in a few minutes. The White House is now giving out a statement. The attack apparently was made on all naval and on naval and military activities on the principal island of Oahu. The president's brief statement was read to reporters by Stephen Early, the president's secretary. A Japanese attack upon Pearl Harbor naturally would mean war. Such an attack would naturally bring a counterattack. And hostilities of this kind would naturally mean that the president would ask Congress for a declaration of war. There is no doubt from the temper of Congress that such a declaration would be granted. This morning, Secretary Hull talked with the secretaries of War and of the Navy. Now the two special Japanese envoys, Admiral Nomura and Special Envoy Caruso, are at the State Department, engaged in conference with Secretary of State Hull. And just now comes the word from the President's office that a second air attack has been reported on Army and Navy bases in Manila. Thus, we have official announcements from the White House that Japanese airplanes have attacked Pearl Harbor in Hawaii and have now attacked Army and Navy bases in Manila. We return you now to New York and will give you later information as it comes along from the White House.
Miriam, I must call Nikki. He's out in California.
Shall I get you anything, Mrs. Charles?
A glass of water would be fine. And some peace in the world.
Yes, ma'am.
Nikki, are you all right?
Yes, of course. People here in L.A. are going crazy. Several Japanese restaurants have been vandalized. Terrible, simply terrible.
Oh, that's horrible. I'm scared, Nikki. What's next?
I don't know. There are so many Japanese Americans living here in California. People are talking crazy here. Everyone is scared and suspicious of anyone who looks like they could be from Japan.
Well, I'm sure our government would never do anything outrageous, like making anyone who is Japanese leave the country.
I sincerely hope not. Not the United States.
Sweetie, I will call you back after I listen to Mrs. Roosevelt's weekly radio program, which is about to come on.
Okay. I'll talk to you later tonight, sweetie. I love you.
Bye-bye, Nikki. I love you, too. Be careful.
Speaking for the Pan American Coffee Bureau, which represents seven good neighbor coffee-growing nations, and presenting to you American families your Sunday evening visit with Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt. This evening, Mrs. Roosevelt has as her guest Corporal James Cannon, 1229th Reception Center, Fort Dix. But first, Dan Seymour has a word from our sponsors, the Pan American Coffee Bureau.
In this moment of trial, the seven neighbor countries which make up the Pan American Coffee Bureau welcome the chance to express their support for their great good neighbor, the United States. The new solidarity which has been effected between the Americas in the last few years stands us all in good stead in the face of this emergency. This applies not only in a commercial sense, for Uncle Sam can count on Latin America for essential materials, whether oil or tin or copper or coffee, but also in a political sense. The Americas stand together.
Thank you, Dan Seymour. And now here's the Pan American Coffee Bureau's Sunday evening news reviewer and newsmaker to give us her usual interesting observations on the world we live in, Mrs. Franklin D. Roosevelt.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I am speaking to you tonight at a very serious moment in our history. The cabinet is convening and the leaders in Congress are meeting with the president. The State Department and Army and Navy officials have been with the president all afternoon. In fact, the Japanese ambassador was talking to the president at the very time that Japan's airships were bombing our citizens in Hawaii and the Philippines and sinking one of our transports loaded with lumber on its way to Hawaii. By tomorrow morning, the members of the Congress will have a full report and be ready for action. In the meantime, we the people are already prepared for action. For months now, the knowledge that something of this kind might happen has been hanging over our heads, and yet it seemed impossible to believe, impossible to drop the everyday things of life and feel that there was only one thing which was important, preparation to meet an enemy no matter where he struck. That is all over now. And there is no more uncertainty. We know what we have to face, and we know that we are ready to face it. I should like to say just a word to the women in the country tonight. I have a boy at sea on a destroyer. For all I know, he may be on his way to the Pacific. Two of my children are in coast cities on the Pacific. Many of you all over the country have boys in the services who will now be called upon to go into action. You have friends and families in what has suddenly become a danger zone. You cannot escape anxiety. You cannot escape a clutch of fear at your heart. And yet I hope that the certainty of what we have to meet will make you rise above these fears. We must go about our daily business more determined than ever to do the ordinary things as well as we can, and when we find a way to do anything more in our communities to help others, to build morale, to give a feeling of security, we must do it. Whatever is asked of us, I am sure we can accomplish it. We are the free and unconquerable people of the United States of America. To the young people of the nation, I must speak a word tonight. You are going to have a great opportunity. There will be high moments in which your strength and your ability will be tested. I have faith in you. I feel as though I was standing upon a rock, and that rock is my faith in my fellow citizens. Now we go back to the program which we had arranged for the night.
Would you like some hot tea? After hearing Mrs. Roosevelt's inspiring message just now, I think I need something a bit stronger.
One double martini, extra dry, with three blue cheese olives coming right up.
Okay, wonderful. Thanks, Miriam. Let me take a moment to say something important. Our country is now at war. What we just heard from our First Lady, Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt, on that afternoon of December 7th, 1941, as a stunned nation, we gathered around the radio to hear the latest about Pearl Harbor. Eleanor Roosevelt, who is called the First Lady of the World, was preparing for her weekly Sunday evening national radio program. At 6:45 p.m., listeners to the NBC Blue Network heard the First Lady's calm, measured voice explained that the president was conferring with his top advisors to address the crisis. It was a remarkable broadcast. With America on the verge of war, the nation heard first, not from their president, but from his wife. That must be Nikki. Nikki, is that you?
No.
Who is this?
I think you know who this is.
No, I'm telling you that I haven't...
Mrs. Charles, how about this Frankie Costaninos murder back in July at the Four Aces Bar over near Columbus Park in Kenosha? And only one body was actually found at the bar.
Go on. I'm listening.
You're now looking into Infocino, aren't you?
Infocino? Well, yes, we are looking into Frank's involvement in those murders.
Frank? What do you mean?
Well, everyone knows that Frank's hands were dirty in Cosentino's murder, and Cavelli's.
Mrs. Charles, you ain't got any of that right.
What do you mean? Of course I do.
You still don't know who this is, don't you?
I ain't got... I mean, I haven't got a clue.
It's Willie. Willie Cavelli.
Only if you're calling from the grave. I saw your headstone over in the cemetery off of Washington Avenue.
It ain't me. And one more thing, Mrs. Charles.
Yes?
You spent quite a bit of time with Gina Infocino yesterday, didn't you?
Yes.
Well?
Well, what?
You haven't got a clue, do you?
About?
You're looking after the wrong Infocino. It ain't Frankie, it's Gina.
What?
She did it. Shot Cosentino in the back of the head out at that fancy horse farm out in the Twin Lakes.
Then who's buried in your grave? Hello? Willie? Willie, is that you?
No, it's me, Dina Infocino.
Dina, are you there?
No, it's Willie. Dina's dead, just like Cosentino.
Oh, no. Oh, no, Willie, what have you done, Willie?
Don't worry, Mrs. Charles. I ain't calling you back anymore. Not again.
Hello, Willie, is...
Willie? Sweetie, this is Nikki, your husband.
Oh, Nikki. You'll never guess what's been going on here.
Are you still working on the case?
No, Nikki. It's over. It's really over. Because the murdered murderer never calls back.
This has been The New Adventures of Nora Charles, Private Detective, starring Janelle Powers as Nora Charles. Also starring in today's broadcast were John Oleksii as Nick Charles, Julie Burton as Dina Infocino, Todd Eaves as Detective Franco and Sheriff Tom Jester, Art Dexter as Willie Covelli, and Alexa Eaves as Miriam. This episode was written by Steve Brown and Michael Ulstrup and was directed by Vicki Dumais. In May of 1941, First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt launched a monthly magazine column called If You Ask Me in the Ladies' Home Journal, then the leading women's periodical in the United States. The column, based on a similar column Mrs. Roosevelt had written for the Democratic Digest, consisted of reader questions and the First Lady's answers. Originally conceived as a way for Mrs. Roosevelt to counter the more-than-usual rumors, innuendos, and backstairs gossip about the inhabitants of the White House, the column quickly expanded to include questions of war, peace, politics, civil liberties, health, education, and family life. We are very pleased to present Vicki Dumais as Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt. Ms. Dumais will soon be appearing in a brand-new stage play, Eleanor R., The First Lady of the World, written by Steve Brown and Michael Ulstrup, and directed by Barbara Tyla and Janelle Powers. And now, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome First Lady, Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt.
Good morning. This is Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt. I am very pleased to join you this morning and share some of the letters that have been sent to me for my monthly column that I write for the Ladies' Home Journal.
Mrs. Roosevelt, here is a letter from Edna Hargroves from Springfield, Missouri. Will you please state once and for all the proper pronunciation of your family name?
It is a little difficult to explain the pronunciation of my name without being able to say it. However, if you think of the flower, rose, and continue as I am spelling it here, R-O-S-E-E-V-E-L-T, you will have it right. The emphasis should be on the first syllable and the E in the middle, pronounced as A, a separate syllable but slurred.
And here's another letter, Mrs. Roosevelt, from Ophelia Kennicott from Portland, Oregon, who asked, why doesn't the government train girls to fly? I'm sure they could be used to ferry bombers, even if there is no need for them in actual fighting.
The Civil Aeronautics Administration did give courses to girls, which were terminated in March 1941 because of the national emergency. They are concentrating on the training of young men. To ferry bombers or to be employed for ferrying purposes required an ability to fly all kinds of planes. This is true in England at the present time. This would require a great deal of training, and few women have had that amount of training. It will take some time for them to acquire it, but I think there is no reason why they should not be given the opportunity, however.
And here is an interesting question from Doris Wisniewski from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. At the end of the war, do you really believe a new League of Nations can be reconstructed, which will help to eradicate militaristic materialism and intolerance born of national boundaries?
I do not know whether a new League of Nations should be created, but I do know that we must have machinery through which we can attempt to build a world where situations like the present do not recur. I am quite sure we are capable of doing this if we approach the problem in a realistic manner and recognize that policing is part of all orderly government.
Here's a letter from Robert Goodman, who lives in Las Vegas, Nevada, and he writes, do you approve of junior high girls or high school girls wearing cosmetics to look grown up?
Robert, no, I do not approve of using cosmetics to appear grown up. I think it would be simpler to wait until leaving high school before trying to enhance your good looks.
And Mrs. Roosevelt, our last question for today comes from Yvonne Hernandez in Santa Fe, New Mexico, who asked, whom do you consider the three greatest women of all times and why?
That is a very interesting question. Florence Nightingale is one of the greatest women in history because she contributed a new conception of one of the purposes to which women should dedicate themselves. I imagine Madame Curie because she demonstrated that a woman's brain has as much ability for scientific research as a man's, and that a woman can be as steadfast in purpose and as self-denying in her work will always be considered great. Harriet Beecher Stowe, because she had the heart to understand a great social problem and all its implications, and the courage to use her ability as a writer to bring it home to the conscience of the people as a whole, seems to me another great woman. Now, I have used these three women simply as symbols of the development of new phases in women's experience. I doubt if any human beings, just by themselves, are very important. But when they start a new trend of thought and action, they are apt to symbolize for their contemporaries and for the future a new idea, and therefore they become important. Thank you so very much for all of those fine letters, and do keep sending them to me in care of the Ladies' Home Journal.
And thank you, Mrs. Eleanor Roosevelt. And now here is the statement to the United Nations General Assembly on the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which Mrs. Roosevelt delivered on December 9th of 1948.
The long and meticulous study and debate of which this Universal Declaration of Human Rights is the product means that it reflects the composite views of the many men and governments who have contributed to its formulation. Not every man nor every government can have what he wants in a document of this kind. There are, of course, particular provisions in the Declaration before us which we are not fully satisfied. I have no doubt this is true of other delegations. Taken as a whole, the delegation of the United States believe that this is a good document, even a great document, and we propose to give it our full support. The position of the United States on the various parts of the Declaration is a matter of record in the Third Committee. I shall not burden the Assembly, and particularly my colleagues of the Third Committee, with a restatement of that position here. Certain provisions of the Declaration are stated in such broad terms as to be acceptable only because of the limitations in Article 29, providing for limitation on the exercise of rights for the purpose of meeting the requirements of morality, public order, and the general welfare. An example of this is the provision that everyone has the right to equal access to public service in his country. The basic principle of equality and non-discrimination as to public employment is sound, but it cannot be accepted without limitation. My government, for example, would consider that this is unquestionably subject to limitation in the interest of public order and the general welfare. It would not consider that the exclusion from public employment of persons holding subversive political beliefs and not loyal to the basic principles and practices of the Constitution and laws of the country would in any way infringe upon this right. Likewise, my government has made it clear in the course of development of the Declaration that it does not consider that economic and social and cultural rights stated in the Declaration imply an obligation on governments to assure the enjoyment of these rights by direct governmental action. This was made quite clear in the Human Rights Commission text of Article 23, which served as a so-called umbrella article to the articles on economic and social rights. We consider that the principle has not been affected by the fact that this article no longer contains a reference to the articles which follow it. This in no way affects our wholehearted support for the basic principles of economic, social, and cultural rights set forth in these articles. In giving our approval to the Declaration today, it is of primary importance that we keep clearly in mind the basic characters of the document. It is not a treaty. It is not an international agreement. It does not purport to be a statement of law or of legal obligation. It is a declaration of basic principles of human rights and freedoms to be stamped with the approval of the General Assembly by formal vote of its members and to serve as a common standard of achievement for all peoples of all nations. We stand today at the threshold of a great event in both the life of the United Nations and in the life of mankind. That is the approval of the General Assembly of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, recommended by the Third Committee. This declaration may well become the international Magna Carta of all men everywhere. We hope its proclamation by the General Assembly will be an event comparable to the proclamation of the Declaration of Rights of Man by the French people in 1789, the adoption of the Bill of Rights by the people of the United States, and the adoption of comparable declarations at different times in other countries. Man's desire for peace lies behind this declaration.
The realization that the flagrant violation of human rights by Nazi and fascist countries sowed the seeds of the last world war has supplied the impetus for the work which brings us to the moment of achievement here today. Thank you very much.